Hi, McCall.
Hi, Kirsty. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Not bad. We're making it through the summer. I'm excited that we had some cooler weather about a week or so ago, and we have some cooler weather that's on the way because fall is my favorite time of year. This heat and humidity has just been oppressive.
Yes, it has. I'm a little over it as well. So I think that everyone will be welcomed to the middle of August, which not just for us, but the Eastern United States is looking like we may trend a little cooler than normal. That is a good thing. Last week we had our agricultural friends on talking about the drought and the dry summer that we've had. And, you know, yes, cooler than normal, but it does look like we may trend still a little drier than normal as well, which they are not exactly thrilled about that, but at least we're in better shape locally here in the Miami Valley than we were last year. So, you know, hopefully they get some decent weather. But our guest this week, I'm just excited to kind of jump in because this is something that we really haven't done. This is a company specifically where they have a weather operations. They have meteorologists. It's not just in the United States, it's global. And they actually are in charge of one of our favorite weather apps, which is RadarScope. So if you are a weather nerd, a meteorologist, somehow you have a phone app, and if you have not heard of RadarScope, then I think you live under a rock. So this will be a good podcast for you to learn more about it. And the man who we're going to bring on, Rennie Vendeweg, is going to be really our liaison into the RadarScope world, but he's going to talk a little bit more, which McCall, we like to also highlight, if you have a meteorology degree, different professions that you can go into. And I think that this is, Rennie in particular has very impressive resume. So he is the vice president of weather operations at DTN, and he's responsible for developing strategic direction for DTN's weather businesses that serve aviation, energy, offshore shipping, transportation, and sports and safety markets, which of course, as a meteorologist, you oftentimes think of just television meteorology, but this is a great company that really touches on how important weather is to so many different industries. So before Rennie joined the private weather industry, he actually was the director of broadcast meteorology program at Mississippi State, which, spoiler alert, I got my bachelor's of geosciences from Mississippi State through distance learning, so I am a bulldog as well. He was the advisor. He trained more than 200 broadcast meteorologists. He was also on air at WTOK in Meridian, Mississippi, in Kansas City. And of course, he then covered Hurricane Katrina when he was working in Mississippi. So Rennie, welcome. As I mentioned, we've literally dabbled in every facet. We're honored.
I like undiagnosed, you know, ADD or something. I've really tried to not to make fun of that, but I've really found a lot of different interests in the weather industry. It's been fun to see the perspectives, being on the television side to start. And really, that's where I thought my career would go, was to be in television the whole time. And a month in was Hurricane Katrina. And that was a life-changing event for me, as it was for everybody on the Gulf Coast. And it taught me that maybe I want to try other avenues to get the word out about weather. And so it was really fun to teach for a while, teach the aspiring broadcast meteorologists. You know, I'm sure it's true for you guys. It almost seemed like a far-fetched dream.
Yeah.
Can I get on television to do weather? And to get that kind of, I felt luck to get to do that and then spread that with other students that had that dream was, it was a very rewarding time in my life to work in that avenue. But I grew up in a family that worked in business. And so I've always kind of had a business bend to myself as well.
Yeah.
And thought weather and business is a pretty interesting avenue. And so for the last 6 years or so, that's what I've been focused on.
Wow.
So I'm curious how each transition happened. Were you just figuring it out and things just landed in your lap? Or, I mean, how does that evolve? Because I feel like sometimes it's when we watch people from television moving out of television, it just seems like an opportunity presented itself and you decided, I'm fortunate enough to be able to walk through that door.
It did. It was interesting. I went through the broadcast meteorology program at Mississippi State for my master's degree. Mm-hmm. So I was on campus for a few years in Starkville. And in fact, when and I worked at that Meridian job at the same time.
Right, because so they're very close, right?
They're about 90 miles apart. So I would work, I was in grad school. I was a teaching assistant as part of grad school. And then on the weekends, I would drive to Meridian in the weather. And I had no social life for about a year and a half.
Right.
Which was probably good for my education too.
Yeah.
You're right. So when I left and I went to Kansas City, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. And so that was a chance for me to get really close to home, weather that I love in the Midwest and so forth. And I got a phone call because the previous director had moved on to the Weather Channel. And they said, would you have any interest in leading the program? And I wasn't that far out of school. I was only 2 years into my broadcast career, but I had sort of sensed a digital revolution going on in TV. So this was 2006, 2007. Oh, okay. When I applied to jobs just months before, I had to send out VHS discs, you know, and to build those resume tapes. It was just an unbelievable amount of work just to apply for the job. So at first I said, no, I think I want to keep going down TV, but they kind of kept pestering. So I went and interviewed and somehow, you know, was lucky enough to get offered the job. And so for the first couple of years, it was all about getting away from the analog way of doing television into, and I remember our students would get broadcast to a cable station that maybe five people watched, you know?
Right.
And I thought, here's YouTube, where we can show off the students anywhere across the country. Let's try this brand new thing called YouTube. So that was that transition. And then as I did that for 7 or 8 years, I was fortunate to meet some really interesting individuals in the weather industry. Mm-hmm. James Spann was just next door in Birmingham, and he's always kind of had a business bend to him. And then I forged a great relationship with Bruce Thomas, who was at Midland Weather Radio for a long time.
Oh yeah.
And Bruce worked at the same station I did in Kansas City. And so I said, how did you get out of TV into, you know, private? And he said, you know, told me a story and said, I want you to meet a guy in Norman, as my lights keep flicking on here. I want you to meet a guy in Norman, Oklahoma named Mike Iles. He was the president of Weather Decision Technologies. And we met and we talked about some business plans. And about a year later, he said, why don't you come out to Norman and join our company? And so we were WDT for 5 years, and then about a year ago we were acquired by DTN. Okay. So it's been, it has been relationship focused. Mm-hmm. I think it's been luck at times, but I've also tried to keep my eye on being flexible with opportunities out there in exploring, not just taking a job, but what could I do with a job if I got that opportunity, and try to see the change in innovation that's going on in all of our sectors of meteorology. It's fascinating. So it's been fun to play in all of those.
I think that's wonderful.
I do too. And I think that Kirsty will probably agree with me. In this industry, it is a very small industry, even in television and outside of that. And it does really lend itself to making those connections. And that's always what I try to tell interns. Make those connections, make sure that you have good relationships, because you never know who's going to know who down the line. And I think people coming in and out of TV and into out of television jobs, you know, you might meet someone down the road that will remember you and remember that impression that you left.
Sure. And I would also tell the up and coming meteorologist to develop as many other skill sets as you can. Think about this for your guys' career, for example. Who would have thought you'd been, when you were in meteorology school, that you'd have a podcast?
Right.
that's not anything you would think about when you're sitting in thermodynamics. But yet, having that skill, it gives you the opportunity to expand and grow your career. And so, it's always been, meteorology is the core of what I love, learn, and do. But it's, how does that impact consumers, businesses, people, safety? All of those items are important, and weather plays an impact in them.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because I think a lot of students, when they go through their meteorology program, sometimes they just think it's either the weather service or television. And maybe this is just me. I feel like more and more companies are seeing how impactful big weather events can be. And it's not just, you know, oil and gas or agriculture, but, you know, anything can basically be impacted by weather. If it impacts your manufacturing, how you're getting things where they're going. We're very close with a meteorologist who works for Assurant. So he actually, you know, is the meteorologist that helps depicting where they need to send more of their staff if there's a hurricane that's going to make landfall, because they know there'll be more claims there. So why don't you talk specifically about DTN and how a meteorologist can be involved, and how specifically you're involved with your operations? What's your mission? What are you guys doing on that day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's a great question. And to be honest with you, it's varied and changes day to day. What we ultimately do is we recognize that we don't think of ourselves as a weather company. We think of ourselves as a data technology company that leverages weather to find insights for businesses. And I am so impressed daily at the ways weather actually impacts business. There's the obvious examples where, let's say you take the Ohio State University or Cincinnati or Dayton, and they're playing football or playing baseball, and there's lightning. There are rules around that. So we help with regulations so that teams can operate safely and within rules. If lightning strikes within 8 miles, we can push an alert to a user, and it notifies them that, number one, you need to stop activity, but then when is it safe to resume is another important part of the equation.
Yeah.
But then you get into examples like Hurricane Isaias,
if I said that.
coming up the East Coast in an extremely populous area. Well, now you have power outages that are going to occur, and it is possible in today's world to predict how many power outages will exist because of weather. That is something that we do. So we work with utilities and we build models that look at historical outage data and what weather caused that, to build a predictive model that says, hey, over the next 3 days, the winds may be like this and may cause outages here and there. That allows crews to pre-position themselves to get power restored as quickly as possible. Number one, that's great for the people at home.
Right.
But there are multi-million dollar decisions made. Every hour of power being out is worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So ultimately, in all of the industries we work in, we're trying to affect multiple decisions. They can be political and regulatory. They can be operational and safety. They can drive profit. You talk about the agriculture example. Well, a farmer, you know, makes really big dollar decisions on when they're going to plant, when they're going to harvest, is the field workable, can I spray? We can help drive decisions to make them the most profitable and efficient on the farm. And for any industry that we work in, that's what we're ultimately looking for. So DTN touches way more things than people would realize. I always joke about those old BASF commercials. We don't make a lot of products you buy, we make a lot of products you buy better. Well, in many cases, we work with a lot of industries to make the consumer safer, have power sooner, buy products cheaper. A lot of the things that we do where we insert weather insights into affect those decisions.
I think that's so, that's fascinating to me. And again, huge possibilities for someone who is a meteorologist or data savvy or computer science savvy. I'm assuming you said you build models. So do you have modelers on your team, or people that are like really inclined with code and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Software engineers, numerical weather prediction models. We've got, I don't know the exact number today. I think it's 8 certified consulting meteorologists on staff.
Wow.
We have a team of 200 operational meteorologists that we consider risk communicators. So they not only look at weather forecasting, but then communicate it to our customers. It is so varied. And then we have people in you know, executive leadership that have meteorology degrees. So we're always trying to make sure that we're scientifically sound to go along with some of the business insights that we have. So we have meteorologists are well scattered throughout our company, doing a wide variety of things from day-to-day forecasting all the way to programming, software engineering, modeling, et cetera.
You guys are global, correct? From what I was looking at, that is, so what other, besides the US, what are some other countries you're dabbling in?
Yeah, so It's a pretty global approach. Our headquarters are in Burnsville, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis. We have offices in the U.S. in Omaha, and then here in Norman, Oklahoma, which is where I'm located. And very strategically, by the way, right next door to the National Weather Center. So we're trying to stay on top of all the, you know, science and research coming out. From a global perspective, so DTN has been on quite the acquiring spree here over the last few years. So we acquired Wilkins Weather out of Houston, which gives us a marine focus. We have offices and acquired Medio Group in Utrecht, Netherlands, which is just outside of Amsterdam. And so that is sort of our European hub, as well as the Middle Eastern hub. So we do quite a bit of work in Dubai and United Arab Emirates. Wow. Then we have an office in Sydney, Australia. We acquired the company WeatherZone, which is the largest private weather firm in Australia. Wow. So that gives us sort of the Pacific and Asia Pac regions. And we have a development office in Manila in the Philippines. So we truly have around the clock work going on at all times, meteorologists on several different continents, all working together to serve our customers. And it's been a fun transition to move real global like that over the past several years. Uh-huh. Because even at when we were at WDT and DTN prior to these acquisitions, we would have customers that might be based in the U.S., but they operate over the globe.
Right, right.
So even though your core customers may be located in North America, we still need to, you know, care about and make sure we're providing weather insights equally across the globe, which can be an interesting challenge because, as we know, we're fortunate in the United States to have our National Weather Service with a great radar network,
right,
weather balloons, weather stations, models. That's not always the case when you get into different parts of the world. And so we've had to be innovative in how we approach customers where we may not have that same infrastructure built.
That is crazy to think about, but it definitely makes sense. And definitely all weather service offices are not created equal depending on where you are in the country. And just, of course, weather isn't. And you may have companies that are manufacturing in another, you know, outside of the United States, they sell here. So I can imagine that definitely keeps it pretty challenging and interesting for you guys.
It is. One of my favorite stories of learning is we're working with an oil and gas group out of Colombia, and they work offshore drilling just off the coast in this bay. And they called us up, and you'll have to forgive my language a little bit here, but they kept saying, you know, we have this phenomena that keeps disrupting our afternoon activities. It would come off the mountains. It's called the chicken ass phenomena. And I was like, I've got to tell you, I have a master's degree in meteorology.
Right.
I've never heard of that one.
What is that?
Turns out that it's a cluster of thunderstorms that develops nearly daily on the mountains right off the onshore and kicks out outflow and thunderstorms into the bay every single day. There's no radar.
Right.
And so we had to figure out, okay, how can we alert them ahead of time? Because it's costly to position offshore oil rigs in a manner that can take on those winds. And you gotta be pretty precise. So we used WRF modeling. We used new GO satellites and lightning data. And we're able to develop a system that provided them advanced warning before the chicken ass phenomenon can hit them every day. Still can't exactly tell you why it's called that, but
that is phenomenal. I mean, and I think now with like the new satellites that we have up in space, it really does give us that ability to really see things offshore that we couldn't before.
That's right. Yeah, it's been an incredible investment in innovation.
Now, Rennie, I have a question. With COVID going on and everything, how has that impacted your business?
Sure. Well, as a business, we have remained very strong. Weather hasn't stopped.
Right.
And so as a result, you know, we're still providing the same service. I think one of the things I'm most proud of is that we managed in an extremely quick amount of time. Think of that March 12 through 20 timeframe where the world sort of stopped. We took operations, which have been there's a lot of infrastructure built in order to provide these operations globally 24/7. And we're able to get our workers remote and safe really fast was zero disruption to our employees. And I'm certain you guys had to go through similar scenarios, you know, where how am I going to broadcast from home or where? Or
right. Safely.
We had very, very much a similar process to go through, and we did it really well. Very proud of our teams for figuring out how to do that quickly. We've kept our employees safe and we've continued to serve our customers. What's been interesting is there's been some articles written about the airplanes, with the lack of airplanes flying. We're really missing a pretty vital source of weather data that feeds our global weather models. And so the way that we've approached that at DTN into, you know, mitigate the risk or not have any sort of degradation of our data is to, and I think we've built infrastructure well for this, is to really utilize the concept of ensemble modeling, mm-hmm. number one. So we're bringing in a lot of data sources, a lot of models, both internally run, but the government models we're all used to working with. And then secondly, our forecast systems have a human in the loop. So our forecast will create sort of a first guess, and it's a good guess with all of those ensembles, but the meteorologists have oversight if they need to adjust a forecast because something isn't quite looking right. So we've worked very hard to mitigate the COVID pandemic. I mean, it's there. There are examples where that are unavoidable of disruption to business and so forth. But I would say that I'm proud of our team for fighting through it, figuring out ways to combat all of the challenges it's brought us. And we were quick to learn what a Zoom happy hour was like.
Yeah.
We, you know, tried to make it the best that we possibly could in a really difficult situation, you know. So I'm proud of the team for that.
Yeah, but in the broadcast field, we definitely very quickly needed to learn how can we access our graphics from home? How can we cut into programming for severe weather from home? McCall and I switched this podcast from being in a radio studio to keeping ourselves distant and getting that all uploaded. And yeah, I mean, we've had to just keep going. I never would have thought, and McCall, you could comment on this as well, in a million years that I would have the technology to completely cover the forecast. And I work overnights. I get in at like 1 a.m. So to feel comfortable that I could cover severe weather from my living room, I never thought we'd get there either.
I know. It's nice to have that option. Certainly, for me personally, I enjoy being in studio and being there in the mix of things. But it's also nice that in this type of situation, you can do things remotely. And it's kind of exciting to see where technology is going to go from this mm-hmm. point on. This is kind of like a really big jump off point for that. And more people are doing things remotely. So I'm sure we'll see that increasing quickly as to all of the new technologies down the road. Rennie, a follow-up question to what you were talking about as far as getting the model data in, excuse me, and then having a meteorologist kind of like look through it and make some changes. Is there just one meteorologist, or is there like a team of people that can make that decision to kind of fix things if necessary?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have a pretty sophisticated set of standard operating procedures that we follow so that we're not, number one, stepping on each other's toes. But our meteorologists tend to have favor an industry that they work in. And those industries typically will have weather perils that are more dangerous than others. So, you know, some lightning might be the thing, or ice or snow or precip. So we're looking mostly at the impact-based variables. When's the rain going to arrive? When is a road going to get slippery? And our meteorologist either will have a regional or industrial approach to what they're looking at. What we're working on is, you know, we have a common set of tools that can be used around the globe. And so when one person adjusts a forecast, it can be seen by other meteorologists too. It's actually a pretty sophisticated method that we work through in order to be able to handle those scenarios and do so efficiently so that we can scale with our customer base as well and work in new regions as we go.
That's really neat. That makes sense. Impact-based, of course. That's what everyone needs to know, especially when you could have things like lightning or, you know, a hurricane that could really derail your day-to-day operations as a company. One thing that we talked about before we kind of started recording the podcast, and McCall showed you on her phone, not just for, you know, you don't have to be in business, you don't even have to be a meteorologist, but you guys are responsible for, I think, probably the most popular radar app that is out there, it, at least in terms of truly giving you every radar product that you need, and that is RadarScope. Let's talk about that, because when I was a new meteorologist, that was one of the first things I downloaded. And I still to this day will track storms here, and we track storms across the country. If there's something big going on or waiting for a hurricane to make landfall, we can do it all off of our phones. And that is thanks to you guys.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, we joke a lot about the popularity of RadarScope. When we send our RadarScope developers to an AMS conference or an NWA conference, they are like rock stars and are signing autographs and taking pictures. It's a cult following. But what's the most interesting, I'm old enough and have worked in weather just long enough to remember the days before RadarScope. And you used to have to go to a TV station or a National Weather Service office to get products like velocity data. Right. And look at hail derived products and precip estimate from radar. And they were expensive and still are expensive systems to have those enabled to work on television from some of the main vendors. And when the iPhone came out, our developers saw an opportunity. And truth be told, when you hear the story, they thought they were going to sell, their goal is to sell 1,000 copies of the app to emergency managers in Oklahoma. It was, let's give them, we've got this supercomputer in a pocket, in your pocket now. Let's give them the radar tools they need to be effective emergency managers. They sold 1,000 of them in a day. Oh. And they're like, wait a second, there's something here. So they started to, you know, became a very big task for that RadarScope team. And so WDT acquired that app in the group, and they are now make up our mobile team that serves all of our mobile products and many of them across our portfolio. But the app is developed. We've been able, you know, behind the strength of DTN to put a lot of resources. So it's always on, the data's fast.
Yeah.
We can continue to innovate as time goes on with dual pole products. And there should be some exciting releases soon where it goes even more global than it is today. By taking in some of the other radar networks, which is one of the advantages of being a global company. Mm-hmm. But it's a fantastic tool. And I think the day I realized that we had something big was I was lucky enough to have dinner with Chuck Doswell here in Oklahoma. Chuck is a big time tornado researcher and I was a student I really looked up to. And he pulled out his iPhone and he was asking about RadarScope, and he said, you know, the only reason I have an iPhone is because of RadarScope. He actually bought, so this $10 app forced him to buy a $700 phone. And I was like, if the big tornado researcher is making decisions like that, we're really on to something. But it's fun to watch the cult following and I walk around at airports and see people using, you know, your app, and you're like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's, you know, not only is it a computer in your phone, it's very user friendly. And I think the fact that it's so easy to use is what I love most about it. And then now, you know, with like a little bit of an upgrade, you get the two panel where you can see multiple products at the same time. It just makes things really easy when I'm away from the studio to be able to see those type of products, because as you mentioned before RadarScope, there wasn't that. You had to be at your business computer looking at those type of products. So I obviously really enjoy it, as does Kirsty and many people I know.
Well, if you have any enhancements you ever want to see, you know who to reach out to.
I was going to say, Randy, now that we know you, like, oh, this is, I feel really cool. But awesome. We do want to thank you so much for joining us. And Rennie, is there anything, I guess, this year maybe that's new for your company that you would just want to briefly touch on before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I think what we've really seen change in the past year, a couple years, is really trying to utilize some of the new technologies that you hear about, machine learning, artificial intelligence, some of the unique technologies that are going to advance weather and the insights that we can create from weather to some pretty amazing technological advances over the next few years. That's what we're working on every day. We're really excited about working with businesses to explore what is weather impacting in their, you know, their bottom line, their safety, their efficiency operationally. And it's just, we're having a blast doing it. And this year will be remembered for so many, you know, horrible things. And, but at the same time, I'm seeing a lot of good come out of this too, and across all of our industries in the weather enterprise. And we're continuing to serve, you know, the general public as well as businesses, and make sure everybody can be safe and operate efficiently. So that's really been our focus and is going to be our focus going forward.
If anybody wants to learn more about your company, what's the website, or do you guys have any social media accounts that anybody could look up?
We do. So you can always visit DTN.com is our website. And we have a few different DTN Twitter accounts, but DTN Weather is the one where we post all of our weather information and some, you know, up to date what's going on now, as well as some features about the company and what we're doing with our customers. So yeah, please visit us and feel free to reach out.
Yeah, I think that's great. Of course, anyone listening that, you know, adding that extra insight when it comes to the forecast and impactful weather, you know, this is a great company and you're a great resource. And any meteorologist or student that's listening, and, you know, Rennie just talked about how much his one company can just open the door in the private sector to all these different possibilities for what you can do with your degree, whether it's, you know, computer science, meteorology. So just in that aspect, Rennie, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, because I learned a lot. Sometimes I forget what we can do with a meteorology degree, and it's not just the weather service or television. So, you know, thank you for sharing a little bit about your life. And then of course, for just how powerful DTN has become and how much you guys are doing. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity, and for those meteorology students. By the way, television and National Weather Service and academia are all awesome avenues to go work in as well. And having experienced them, I can't say a negative about any of the different sectors I've worked in. It's just a great field to be in.
And as always, thank you for listening and perhaps watching Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast. You can download, subscribe, rate us on your Apple Podcast app, on Google Play, Stitcher, and you can also visit WHIO.com. If you have a streaming device, you can also watch our vodcast version on Apple Fire, Google Play. Yep. I'm so confused now. As well as on any type of streaming television, just look for WHIO and you can download the app there. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.